Jumping in on Manx Radio
with Howard and Chris Kane.
Hello.
Good evening.
And welcome. And here we are again, Saturday night, 9 o'clock, jumping in the best in modern and contemporary jazz with myself, H.
And me, Chris. Yes, it's another one of our specials, woohoo! With Joe Lovato, Grammy Award winning saxophonist, composer, arranger, multiple other prestigious awards. Barclay alumnus, has an honorary doctorate, has the Gary Burton Chair in Jazz Performance, and has played with virtually everybody on the planet. I was around a lot of beautiful energy as a kid, he said. My dad was my main influence and inspiration. Jazz to me is your personal expression on your instrument. So without further ado, here he is with the Brussels Jazz Orchestra playing Powerhouse.
Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. That was Powerhouse, taken from the album Wild Beauty, Sonata Suite for the Brussels Jazz Orchestra featuring Joe Lovano and arranged by Gil Goldstein. That would have been a band to see opening a festival. I've dedicated this project to my mum and Josephine Vertzi, Liz Varno, he says. She was born and lived a life in Cleveland, but a heart and soul with her Sicilian roots, and these tunes are reflections of my life and experiences. And we heard Nico Shepers on trumpet, Natalie Laurier on piano, and of course, today's guest, Joe.
Marvellous stuff, and you can't go wrong with a bit of Natalie Laurier on the piano. Wonderful stuff indeed. It is Jumping In, and it is our special with the tenor titan, who is Joe Lovano. We had the great pleasure of having a chat with Joe earlier on this year when we were still in lockdown. He was over in the New York side. We were on the Isle of Man side. A pretty good Zoom link. A lovely chap as well, that despite some slight problems we had with time differences because it just changed that day. However, we caught up. He was on really good fettle. We had a great long chat about his life, his music, his new album, Garden of Expression, where he's sort of going for a different direction again with his trio. But we started out chatting about just how lockdown had affected some of the great performance spaces for jazz.
One of the major clubs that that didn't survive is the Jazz Standard.
Standard, yeah.
If you remember that club, which we were really sad to see go, you know. Right at this point, the Village Vanguard and the Birdland and the Blue Note, those three major clubs are still surviving somehow, you know. But they're doing some live streams, but there's been a lot of benefits and fundraising going on, you know. So we're just hoping for the best that when we can gather again and really play for a room full of people. I'm not sure how long that's going to take, you know, to unravel at this point.
Sure.
I mean, for me, my next gig, and it's with the Trio Tapestry, is at the Newport Jazz Festival, August 1st. And we're hoping that's going to happen. But it's still, that's kind of up in the air. Also right now, it's not totally canceled. It's confirmed, but we'll have to see. We got to let it play out, you know?
We keep
with
our fingers crossed.
All these variants coming in.
Yeah, there's all these things going on, and I'm not sure about the international touring schedule, like how it could come back right now, like it was, you know? 2019 for me was an amazing year of touring with the Trio, Trio Tapestry. We came to Europe like two or three times, and we recorded the Garden of Expression in November of 2019 in Lugano.
Which was just after you'd played for the London Jazz Festival. I think we saw that gig.
That's right.
Yeah, it was during that tour, you know.
Yeah.
And so happy that was scheduled. And then we couldn't mix or do anything right when we recorded. So Manfred Eicher, he did the post-production when he could, like after things unraveled enough for him to go and do the mixing and mastering. And I'm really happy that this recording was able to be documented and finished to be released this year, you know.
It's a great sounding album, by the way, because we've got an advanced promotion copy and fantastic music.
Beautiful.
Took us back to the gig, but really, really nice set.
Well, yeah, you know, like you could feel like the night before we recorded in that beautiful recital hall in Lugano, you know, the radio there, we played a concert for a full audience, and we really played like a performance like you heard in London, you know?
Yeah.
And then the next day we gathered and put the pieces together for the recording, and just the atmosphere and the way it all flowed, there was a real oneness about the way it came together and all unfolded that day. Thank you.
So tell us about the move to ECM, because you've been with the Blue Note for, what, 26 albums or something? People might have known you with Paul and Bill before that on his label as well. But what brought about the change? Was it the musical change, or did you feel ready for a change, or were you heading in a different direction?
Well, you know what? I signed with Blue Note in like 1991 or something, and I had 3 consecutive 7 record deals through those years, which was always amazing to me. You know, I mean, it just kept rolling and moving from one project to the next, working with Bruce Lundvall and projecting ideas and the different ensembles that I was playing with and putting together as a leader. You know, things just unfolded in a magical way with Bruce. And then Don Was came on the scene and we, you know, carried on with him. But then when my last contract was up, I released, I think, Live at Newport with Hank Jones, George Mraz, and Lewis Nash from a session that I had in the can. And that became my last release on Blue Note as a leader, you know. And I think it was just time to just take a breath and move into the next phase of recording.
Thank you.
I had always had a great relationship with Manfred, really from the early 80s, working with Paul Motion, you know, and Bill Frisell. The first recording with Manfred was 1981 with a quintet that also had Ed Schuller on bass.
Oh, yeah. Psalm, I think.
Yeah, Psalm, and Billy Drews, alto and tenor. And that was the first time I was in the studio with Manfred, and we had a relationship all those years. So it was a real natural thing to move for me from my Blue Note period into this now recording for Manfred as a leader, you know?
the sound, obviously, of Trio Tapestry, again, much more spacious. It's got what a lot of people might sort of say, you know, that ECM sound, that much more spacious, more sort of romantic, a lot more about, as they all say in ECM, you know, the sort of the silence is golden, as it were, that importance of the space in between the notes, almost quite different from a lot of the Blue Note releases.
Well, you know, I think Blue Note Records and Prestige and Atlantic, those labels, I mean, they all had a nightclub sound. You know, it was like a nightclub sound on all of those dates, you know, through the years. And I think ECM has had more of a recital hall sound, you know, more of a concert venue sound, let's say, you know. And that has been Manfred's kind of statement about the music. ECM's in its 50th year, right? Yeah. 2019 was 50 years. Mm-hmm. So he really established himself really from the late 60s with a conception and an approach about that that feeling, you know, the airiness and the atmosphere of more of a recital hall sound, as opposed to the nightclub sound, you know? So musically, there was quite a few of my releases on Blue Note musically that could have been an ECM release, you know, within the music, the concepts of the music, mm-hmm. you know? So I feel it all as one in a certain way, because these days we play in more recital hall settings, you know, outside of New York City or like Ronnie Scott's in London, there's some major clubs that we do play, of course, and it feels different than when you're playing in a beautiful kind of a recital venue. So, you know, Manfred tries to capture that in a studio. Our first Trio Tapestry record was recorded at Sear Sound in Manhattan in a studio setting, you know, which does not have a natural recital hall sound. So Manfred is in there with you, man. He's a master at post-production and as an engineer himself, you know. And when you listen to a playback of a take, it feels like the recording right away with the way he hears things, you know, and it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful to work with someone like that, you know, when you're making a date, you know, where then the recording Garden of Expression was actually in that beautiful setting at the Lugano studio. So the sound was a natural sound like that, right, as we were playing, you know, and that creates an atmosphere when you really get down into listening to each other so deeply, and music unfolds in another kind of way when you play with no headphones and it has that atmosphere. You know? Thank you. it's such a blessing to live in the world of music, first of all, you know, and to have experienced so many different settings and ensembles, and to work with some really masterful leaders through the years, you know, developing to a point where I started to really put my own groups together, and being a leader in my own right, you know, definitely like starting out as a young player in my teens, growing up with my dad and the crowd he was around. It was more small group music as a kid, you know, a lot of organ groups, you know, in the 60s when I was a teenager, in my late teens, a lot of my dad's groups were organ trios, you know, with saxophone, organ, drums, sometimes with a guitar player also. You know, most of the clubs during that period in the 60s, they didn't have pianos. There was only a handful of clubs that I remember growing up where there was a nice piano.
Yeah.
So you could drive up to the front door of any place, the corner tavern, and bring the organ in and turn any venue into a jazz club. And that's what was going on in the States, you know, that they call the Chitlin Circuit. And, you know, throughout the States, in Pittsburgh and Cleveland, where I'm from, and Detroit and Philadelphia, you know, I mean, there were major venues that had nice pianos, but most of the local scenes were different, you know. So I grew up in a real soulful music world as a kid, and then playing in some larger groups, saxophone sections. It was one friend of my dad who had a club, and he was a saxophone player and keyboard player, and he had a saxophone, like a super sax type group, you know, with like five saxophones and a rhythm section. Yeah. And as a young cat, man, I came up going to all those rehearsals and playing all these great arrangements for a saxophone section, you know. So I was learning from different experiences at that time. And moving to New York in the mid-70s, I really got into all kinds of different music with all kinds of folks, you know.
Yeah.
And sure, ended up landing the gig with the Woody Herman Band after being in New York a few months. And in 1976, my first tour in Europe was in 77 with Woody. And I think we did 2 weeks at Ronnie Scott's. My first time in Europe, where, you know, there was a music store, Rayman's Music.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an Oriental shop right near Ronnie's.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we know it.
That's where I bought my first gongs, 1977. And since that time, I mean, that collecting instruments from around the world has been a real important part of my touring, you know. Trying to really vibrate on tonalities and feel the different wood flutes and instruments from around the world. And going to Rayman's Music, I got a few gongs, and I bought a Chinese musette, like the instrument Dewey Redman plays, you know, an ornette.
Did you try one of those peculiar harmonicas, what they call them, a sho? The Chinese.
I have a funny collection of a bunch of different instruments from my travels, you know, and one is like that harp that you can harmonize on it a little bit and stuff. The hulu.
Yeah, and the shakuhachi that flute again. That's something else.
Shakuhachi from Japan.
The tabla, talking drum from Rayman still as well.
Yeah, you know, so I mean that for me was the beginning of really exploring a lot of music that I'm working on today. Thank you. an ensemble sound like that echoes some of my previous work, you know, Universal Language and Viva yeah. Caruso, the street band, some, you know, some ensemble music, you know. So I've been writing and working on some ideas of putting things together with the trio kind of as its base, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
To have some other voices and colors within it, you know. But at this point, you know, because I didn't tour at all in 2020, things are a little, you know, I had things booked that might come back in the near future, hopefully. There was a project with Chucho Valdez that there is a date in November in Paris, possibly, that's going to happen, playing with Chucho. So we've been doing stuff together. So that's in the horizon to regroup, hopefully, you know. Yeah.
Okay. That sounded good.
It's funny. It's a funny thing because also my quintet, Us Five, mm-hmm. we had a big year playing Charlie Parker, you know, that all just went away, you know. So I feel I want to do something with the Us Five ensemble with the double drummers, bass and piano, you know, and write some new music and bring that forth again, you know.
So just very finally, are you optimistic about the future of the music industry and jazz in particular? It's been through a tough old year, as we've been saying, but can you remain optimistic about the way the music industry, and particularly within your own sphere, is going forward?
Well, you know, I think like the positive thing about these live streaming events that have been happening is that we're able to reach an international audience, you know, from a studio setting or from, you know, a venue like the Village Vanguard, that stage, you know, to reach an international audience in that way, in that fashion, I think is going to carry on in the future, even when we are back on the road somehow, you know? So I feel optimistic about that idea of putting a project together, documenting it, and having a release of some kind in that way, you know.
Well, Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I just want to say we both really hope that the next time we see you perhaps is after a gig in the UK where we can share a glass or something and talk about these great times moving forward, because live music has got to come back, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, I'm really looking forward to coming and playing in the UK again, and we had dates at Ronnie Scott's that went away last year. One of my first things that was canceled was a tour I was going to do with Enrico Rava, because we put out a recording together.
Yeah, that was lovely.
Yeah, fantastic.
And we had a whole tour that all of a sudden went away, and hopefully something like with Enrico is going to regroup and have a few moments to present some of our music together for some folks, you know.
Well, we look forward to that very much.
Yeah, we're all kind of just on hold right now, hoping
even our fingers crossed.
Yeah, and we know it will. It's just going to take a little time to unravel, and we have to be patient.
we know exactly what you mean, Joe.
He's gone there now.
That was Dibango from Joe's 2009 folk art album, featuring Joe harmonising with himself on the Orlochrome. What's that, you might ask? A new instrument invented only in 1999, which looks pretty much like two adjoined soprano saxes, each with their own mouthpiece. You might argue, is there a need for such a horn? When, if I remember correctly, Rassan Roland Kirk used to get as many as three or four full-size sacks into his mouth at the same
certainly
time.
Certainly three, easily.
Yes. Well, that's about it for this week's edition of Jumping In. And as the longest day has gone, you'll be aware the evenings will be shortening. All the more excuse for putting your feet up and listening to jazz. For
sounds
now,
it's good to me. Yeah, and thanks very much, of course, to Joe Lovano for sharing the time with us. A wonderful chatting to him. We do, as we said at the end, the hope we can catch him live and see some live jazz soon within the next year. And I hope you enjoy the selection, a tiny selection of some of the stuff Joe's done over the years. Brussels Jazz Orchestra, Paul Motion, Bill Frisell, Dibango. You name it, he's
Michael Olutaju, everything. Oh. Yes, lots and lots of different stuff. And there's plenty more to go at. Well, for now, we're going to leave you with our guest, Joe Lovano, on Vince Mendoza's 1990 album, Start Here with Save the World, in the company of Peter Erskine and our old pal, Ralph Towner.
Terrific. A nice roundup of some of the best CDs next week. See you then.
See you then. Bye for now.